What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush Interview Friday with Lauren Fogelbaum.
Hello.
Baum. I don't know why I don't want to say Fogelbaum.
Fogelbaum, yeah, that's the technical German pronunciation, so.
That's right. How are you doing?
Oh, that's a great question, I suppose.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm fine, you know. I'm hanging in there. I think I've gotten used to things for the most part. I've got a lot of election anxiety, but other than that, I'm well.
I had the thing happen where my landlord of 4 years was suddenly like, "All right, get out in 2 months."
Oh no!
So that's going on in the middle of this pandemic, and it's just fine. It's working out, but I will say that it's a level of stress that I was not anticipating having to have.
Wow. So are you in the old place that you have to get out of?
Yes. Yes. I'm currently broadcasting into my closet. Who knew that 2020 was the year all of us were going to get back in our closets, right?
What part of town do you live in? I don't even think I know that.
Oh, I'm over in Reynoldstown, right by the like Edgewood Shopping Center sort of area.
Yeah.
Looking to stay in relatively the same area.
Cool. You got a place lined up yet, or is it?
That's a thing that I hope to have on lock by Friday. We've spent the past few days looking sort of frantically at many houses with many face masks. So it's but the looking is the fun part, like getting to go like, ooh, architecturally speaking, what happened here?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I've lived in the same house for 13 or 14 years now, but we did move out a couple of years ago when we renovated for like 8 months. Mm-hmm. And it was a pain in the ass, but it was kind of like, I remember moving to different apartments, and like, moving always sucks, but I always enjoyed getting a new place and just a change of scenery. I didn't mind moving so much.
Yeah. Getting to remake or like reorganize your life and that opportunity to go through things and go like, why do I have this? Get rid of that.
Totally.
I'd like it on a more relaxed schedule, but.
Well, yeah, choosing to move is different than being told to leave. I don't think I've ever been not kicked out, but, you know, I don't think I've ever had to leave sooner than I wanted to. So that's a different deal.
It is. It's okay. It was a known factor that our landlord is a real pill. And so it's a surprise to no one that he is being a real pill. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you land in a great place, though.
Ah, I think I will.
Good. So if you recognize Lauren's voice, you may have listened to her on this show when you guested on, I think it's just some Halloween episodes, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I did that roundup for right around awards season, and we talked about Knives Out.
Oh, you weren't on any of the Halloween episodes?
No, I think I meant to be, and then it never happened.
Okay, well, we'll have to get you in there this year for Frighttober, but
yeah,
that's right. We talked Knives Out, and you also, you're on a bunch of shows. Why don't you just go through and tell everyone all the shows you're on now? Because you're on a new one I didn't even know you were on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I almost didn't know that I was on that one for a minute. So I'm on the short form science show, Brain Stuff. It's just like 5 to 7 minutes of general science topics every day of the week.
The show that won't die.
Yeah, it's been running for 13 years now.
That's crazy.
It was originated by Marshall Brain, who, and I'm pretty sure that's his real name. Is that his real name?
That's his real name.
Gosh, what a thing. Anyway, yeah. So I'm hosting that one now. I'm also with a frequent guest of yours on Movie Crush here, Annie Reese. We're co-hosts on a show called Savor, which is a more conversational.
Yeah, Savor's great.
Oh, thank you. Oh man, I think it's great too. Like we have a lot of fun. Like we're covering like the science and culture and history of foods, but yeah, Annie and I just have an absolute blast. Then. Yeah, you know, the new one that I'm doing right now is called American Shadows, and that's with the Grim and Mild team, headed up by Aaron Menke, and it's about dark, true stories from American history. I think the team wanted to focus on stuff that happened in America and that kind of highlights how, you know, they're like wild, desperate times that we cover, but there's like truth and justice always prevail. So despite it being like a murder show, it's really comforting to work on right now.
Yeah. How long has that one been out?
Only since mid-September. What month are we in?
We're in August. We just crossed over into September.
Okay.
It's Labor Day weekend coming up.
It launched in mid-August. So there's only a couple episodes out.
So it's brand
now.
New.
Yeah, yeah. It's once every other week. Just a real tight 30-minute show, scripted. The excellent Miranda Hawkins is doing the editing on that one, and her.
Oh, cool.
Her storytelling through the soundtrack and just through the way that she edits the pieces together is really beautiful. So,
oh man, well that's great. Miranda's awesome. I got to check that out because I heard the promos and it just sounds really cool. And it sounds like a cool new show. Like that's big time A-list stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It is. So I was as surprised as anyone when Aaron tapped me for it.
Oh, come on.
But I get to do like my serious creepy voice and like use a lot of vocal fry. So it's fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have one just as far as vocal qualities go, I think you have one of the best voices for this in our company. We all kind of fell into it, but you, I think, had a real knack for it from the beginning. I can't say the same for like Josh and I are who we are, but you're just a pro voiceover person at this point, I feel like.
Oh, thank you for saying so. I mean, I think that any technical vocal quality that I possess is balanced out by my just shattering anxiety over performing every single day. So like
really?
Y'all
still?
Yeah. Yeah. Y'all are not every single day. I'm fine. It took me about 3 years, to be honest, to not be like pit sweating every time I went into the studio. And y'all seem to come at it so naturally. And I'm really envious of that. Like, I feel like I just have these conversations in my head with how conversations on mic could go. Every time I go in, especially if I'm like I'm like nervous talking to you because I'm not used to doing it. So, so I'm just like, anything could happen. It's not Annie.
Oh, Lauren. Well, it certainly, I'm not Annie. I'm not, wish I was Annie. It certainly doesn't come through. You're fantastic and your shows are great. So you should.
Thank you.
You
you're
remember
great.
That.
Hush up. I'm like, oh, thank you, Daddy Chuck. Like that.
Oh, I know,
Daddy,
that sounds
wrong. I'm gonna let's That's all just right. ignore that I said that. Cool.
Big brother. So I wanted to get you in here for a solo effort, and we'd been wanting to do this for a long time, and it just sort of, I think COVID happened, and then I fell into a rhythm of having a certain group on. Then I was like, wait a minute, I haven't had you on in a long time, and I haven't had Annie on in a long time, because I think she moved too, right?
She did not. She's still in the same place, but I think that being a lot more. Well, certainly like a lot more extroverted than I am. Like she had like a major mental shift that might be called a move.
Okay. Gotcha. So, when it came to time to pick a movie, you were, like every person who's ever come on this show had a little anxiety about it because it's tough. You get do-overs though. So you didn't have to really stress about, like you can come back on the show. It didn't have to be the one and only movie.
But what if I mess up the first one and then you're just like, oh, that guy, not that guy, nah. Anything but that guy.
No, I think your list of movies was interesting. So tell them about the few that you didn't, that we didn't go with.
All right.
Because they might show up later.
Yeah, sure. So, So I sent you this list and then I realized afterwards that it was probably more self-revelatory than I completely intended it to be.
Okay.
I just rattled off. I was like, I don't know, like what could I possibly say is my favorite movie? Like Ghostbusters or maybe like The Witch, like The Witch was so good. Or yeah. I don't know, Beetlejuice or Videodrome or The Fifth Element.
Great movies.
All great films, yes. I think the pattern here is that like yeah, I'm like a spooky bitch. And that's what's going on.
Well, that's cool. That's a good one to be. we could have, you know, I think eventually we'll probably just tackle most of these. Well, I'll just have you back and I know we're going to do The Witch sometime around October this year. We'll have you back for that for sure. But we definitely should do Fifth Element. That's a movie I haven't seen in a long time. But we ended up going for this one with Videodrome, which is a movie from 1983, written and directed by David Cronenberg. Kind of one of his first bigger movies, even though it didn't perform well. But the first movie where he had some kind of Hollywood backing after a series of really weird under-the-radar movies. Not to say this isn't weird.
Oh, quite the opposite. Yeah. I think it's the first film that he had studio involvement with from the get-go.
Right.
And with Universal, which was a pretty conservative studio at the time. So he was real confused about it. I get the feeling.
Yeah, he probably still is. And and whoever greenlit this is probably still confused. It has all the hallmarks of a David Cronenberg movie, which is to say, body horror, obviously, technology and the body becoming one. Have you ever seen Existenz?
Yeah.
I feel like that was sort of had some of the DNA of Videodrome in it.
Yeah, it's sort of like the first term that popped into my head was classier, like a classier version of Videodrome, but I don't think I don't know, like a little bit less offensive on purpose, maybe.
Yeah, a little less schlocky. I mean, this is sort of a Videodrome, sort of a B movie, and obviously people like us say that as a term of endearment, and not as a slag. It did not do well in the theaters because I imagine it's a cult classic now. But I was trying to imagine when I was watching it today what people in 1983 thought of this thing.
Sure. And I mean, like, it comes off as being a little bit prophetic when you watch it now. But at the time, yeah. I mean, it's also I was watching the director's commentary to prepare for this. Are you a human who likes watching a director's commentary?
Well, I'm a human who used to do that a lot when I was buying DVDs and had more time in life and not a child. But I haven't done that in a long time, but I miss it. I do love commentaries.
Yeah. I had to figure out how to play a DVD in order to do it. The answer was that I had a PS2 like in a box in my closet and that worked out.
Right.
But so I was watching this commentary and he was saying that he didn't know, the script was not finalized and he didn't know the plot as they were shooting it.
Really?
And I think it shows.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you said that because it is a movie that is great in a lot of ways, but also meanders a little bit, and I think it feels like it has trouble figuring out its own point of view a little bit. Does
yeah,
that make sense?
It does. Well, and I do think that in some ways it's one of those films that isn't necessarily an exercise in crafting a taut plot line. It's like not a Knives Out kind of situation. sort of polar opposites there. But it is very aware of the textures it's using and the kind of philosophy that it's building, even if it had to sort of talk itself through the process as it goes. But I will say this is an 89-minute film, and it feels like it goes on for 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pretty tight 89, but it meanders a little bit. I do know what you mean, though. Like, I think part of the likability of this movie isn't necessarily the plot. It is texturized, and it is sort of a feel and a mood. It's unsettling.
Oh,
I imagine it's unsettling now. And like you said, so much of this stuff was way, 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 way before its time. But, I think I saw it when I was younger. There's no way I saw it when I was 12.
Oh, I hope not.
No, I was not seeing movies like this. I was like E.T. and the Goonies boy. But I know I saw it. I think I probably saw it in college on VHS, like probably when I worked at a video stores when I saw it.
I'm glad that you bring that up, because I was going to ask you if you remember the first time that you saw it, or like the first time-ish, and like how you felt about it at the time.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time in college where I worked at this great video store, and where I really got turned on to stuff like this. And I remember Scanners and Videodrome being, you know, my first two Cronenberg movies, and becoming a fan. And just, I don't know much about the guy, like what makes him tick. He's always sort of been like a David Lynchian figure to me as far as a true, just unique voice in cinema, you know?
Yeah. I also watched it for the first time in college. I think for a class, because I was an English major taking some really weird classes. I think this one I watched for a class called Psychocinema Analysis.
Oh, cool.
So very, very much into Freud, and very much into movies that play with that kind of imagery, and also with technology. And so this was sort of like I'm pretty sure that the dude doing the class like watched this movie and was like, dude, what if I do a whole class about this?
That's funny. I could totally see that.
Yeah. And like my reaction was just like, I don't think that I knew that you could make a movie like this. I was like, you could make a movie like that? Like something that's just so batshit, but also so culturally relevant.
Yeah. I mean, it opens with the introduction of Civic TV, which is the TV station that James Woods runs. And even that opening bit where he has the lady talking about your schedule for the day and all that. I mean, that's Alexa or Google Home or whatever.
Yeah.
In 1983, it's nuts to think about.
Absolutely. And just how I don't know, like oppressive it manages to be in a completely cheerful way. The slogan for the TV station, I think, is the one you take to bed with you. And I'm like, who?
Right. Yeah, it's supposed to be comforting, but somehow is not.
Not at all. Not especially given everything else that happens in this movie.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. Good Lord. It's also a movie that reminded me how much I used to love James Woods. I mean, he's such a creep now. It's hard to kind of unknow that stuff. But he was always so good at playing a creep and a sleazeball. One of the great actors, I think, from back then, if given the right role.
Absolutely. And he's so good in this movie. He's so funny. His physical, he brings his physicality to the role that is clearly important for a lot of the kind of action sequences, but also it, just these little moments of physical comedy where he's kind of just a little twitchy.
There's the moment where he goes into the spectacular optical office for the first time, and he tries on those goofy looking glasses and kind of gives himself a look in the mirror. And you know that was pure James Woods, probably just doing a little improv bit there.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of little lighter moments like that, that, and moments where I wonder, like, Cronenberg is so weird, but there are moments too where I wonder if Cronenberg is, has his tongue in cheek a little bit.
I think he pretty firmly does, or like that's the idea that I get, because it doesn't come off like the fact that there are so frequently that he does so frequently cast these actors who are a little bit weirder and more cerebral and like less like classic Hollywood, and the fact that he does so frequently incorporate these small moments of humor to offset the horror. I think it's a super important balance in any horror film, and any comedy film, really, like, you know, goes both ways. But and for this, apparently, as they were making up the script and the plot, James Woods would come up with a bunch of ideas, and they would wind up going with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is you listen to the commentary? What is Cronenberg like when he's talking about this stuff? Is he like self-serious, or is he kind of like, how does he view this stuff now?
He said, so the commentary is on the Criterion edition of the film, and so I'm not sure when the DVD would have come out, but I imagine a decade or two ago. And he said that he, in preparation for it, had watched the film for the first time in like 25 years. His manner is very scholarly in a way. Mm-hmm. It's very much, he's very much into the philosophy of what he's talking about. Although I don't think that he would term it like that. Like, I think that he would find that pretentious and would try to avoid it. But he talks so much in that commentary about Marshall McLuhan, are you familiar mm-hmm. with? Yeah, yeah. A dude who wrote this book called Understanding Media in 64.
Yeah.
And famously coined the phrase, the medium is the message. And one of the things that Cronenberg talks about at length is how the character Brian Oblivion is
Professor Oblivion.
Professor Oblivion. O period Oblivion. The pun. We need to talk about the puns in this film, but that's a thread over here. And that's another reason why I don't think that this dude is taking himself too seriously. Like, I think that he takes his subject matter seriously, but I think he's having fun.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, there's no way he yeah. I think it's I think it borders on satire at times a little bit.
Yeah.
Without being like super overtly satirical, not like Paul Verhoeven, which we've been watching, like Paul and I did Starship Troopers.
Oh, gosh.
And RoboCop. Yeah. Like, that's straight up satire. But I think this sort of plays around with the tone of satire a little bit, which is super cool, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
There's another good quote in this movie, too, that there's a couple of creepy quotes that are very relevant today. Is one from Professor Oblivion, where he says, "The television screen has become the retina of the mind's eye."
Ooh.
I mean, shit, that was 1983, and that might as well be like the slogan for modern day society.
Yeah. Yes.
And then James Woods has a line sort of as the Videodrome, kind of early in the movie when he's looking at these essentially snuff films and getting judged for watching them. And he says, you know, better on TV than in the streets. And It's an interesting quote because this character, I think he thinks he's moral in a way.
Yeah, because he's letting people experience these dark thoughts, these darker desires, these more dangerous things without actually going out and participating in them.
Yeah, and like Debbie Harry, who by the way, Debbie Harry's in this movie.
Yeah,
from Blondie, amazing.
So good.
And she's been in a few films, but she's a classic.
Yeah,
but she he tries to keep her from doing this stuff. Like she clearly, I mean, once we learn kind of what she's doing, that becomes part of the plot. But at first you just think she has certain kinks and sexual fetishes, and he tries to keep her from doing these things. Like, no, you shouldn't cut yourself. You shouldn't do these things. For someone who's running something like Civic TV, I thought it was an interesting balance.
Yeah. It's a little bit sweet. Like, because he's clearly like a little bit of a creepazoid, but at the same time, he's going like, oh no, like, don't want to hurt you. And she's like, what? Like, this is fun.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Like, she's way more hardcore than he is. Like,
oh,
he's
yeah.
a bit of a coward, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And she sort of winds up bringing him into it. And I love that, again, especially in 1983, being able to have that dynamic between a man and a woman on screen and have the woman mm-hmm. be the one who, even though she's the masochist in the sadomasochistic relationship of theirs, for the most part, she's very much in control most of the time.
I can never remember which is which. The masochist
is the one receiving the.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And the sadist is the one giving it.
That's why I never took to it. People are like, Chuck, you're not doing it right. Like, oh, I always forget.
You're
which
like,
one am I again?
Just give me a note. Just tape it to my forehead. I don't know. another quote, when they're just starting out their relationship, they're on this first date where they're in his apartment and she's flipping through a box of Betamax tapes because Betamax is what uh-huh. this entire movie is about, which I love. She's like, ooh, what about this one? What about this one labeled Videodrome? That looks interesting. Is it porn? And he's like, well, it ain't exactly sex. And she's like, says who? And I'm like,
yeah, interesting. It's a definitely, there's a point of view in here that big time movies did not explore. Like there was no precedent for this film. And I'm sure when the executives at Universal got the first cut, they were just like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, can we even release this? I'm sure they had those conversations.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, and the MPAA or the Canadian equivalent, I'm not sure
right.
what it is. But yeah, apparently during that time, they would just literally take your print and they would cut what they didn't want out of it. And
oh, really?
That's the print that would wind up circulating.
Wow.
And it was kind of, and a lot of those scenes have been put back in since then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know if the film was in release long enough, and it was on a physical print, you know, it's not like these digital times mm-hmm. when you can just, for no money, just throw prints everywhere. But
Yeah. Boy, that's crazy. I can't imagine handing over the editing keys to a ratings board.
Right? Especially the keys of something like this. Like
I know. It's like, I'm surprised it wasn't 60 minutes long.
they did. He talks about them cutting some very specific pieces that, you know, like while not integral to the plot, sure, are integral to the mood and the feel of the piece and are not obscene. You know, this is a very uncomfortable movie to watch in a room full of people, mm-hmm. I think, which I love. Yeah. but it's also, yeah, it's just it's a mood. It's a mood.
It is. And it's a movie with full of practical effects. Obviously, if it's 1983, you're not mm-hmm. going to have CGI or anything. And some of it looks pretty good still. I thought all the TV stuff where things were coming out of the TV screen, I think that stuff really still looks fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. When the TVs are like breathing and James Woods is physically interacting with them. Those are beautiful. There's one scene where he's touching the top of the television and it's kind of breathing and these veins pop out, and it gets me every time. I'm like, oh, how cool.
Totally.
Yeah.
It holds up in that manner.
Yeah, in some scenes, it's definitely like you can it gets a little bit cheesy. But it was Rick Baker doing those effects.
I kind of figured it was.
Yeah, and this was right after he had just done An American Werewolf in London, and so like what a wonderful time to get a Rick Baker on your side.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of he was on the leading edge kind of as a young artist back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how much fun I think my brother and I, when we were little, were sort of obsessed with this kind of gore and thought that we both wanted to get into being like special effects people.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what's more fun than like making a head explode or making a stomach vagina?
Yeah.
I mean, we had to go there at some point, right?
Oh, yep, yep. There is definitely a torso vagina, and it definitely plays heavily in this film.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about it. That's one of the central, most memorable parts of this movie is this recurring bit where James Woods has an opening in his chest stomach cavity that it very intentionally looks like a vagina, I think.
Oh, yeah. That is not an accident.
Things are put in it. Yeah. David Cronenberg makes no accidents.
Not when torso vaginas are concerned.
There's a gun put in there and that disappears. There are meaty breathing videotapes put in there. An arm is sort of stripped or degloved, maybe.
Other people like he self-inserts things, and then other people kind of more forcefully insert things into him. And then there's that scene at the end with the where the hand gets stripped. There he's got a torso vagina dentata.
Totally. Where are the teeth?
And gosh, speaking of puns, when that dude who gets his hand eaten pulls his hand back out, it's a literal hand grenade.
Oh, man. I don't think I quite picked up on that. You're right.
Because, then he's like, oh, no, there's this grenade that's my hand now. And then he blows up. And so I don't understand.
God damn, that's great. But every single time, I mean, it's effective. Like David Cronenberg wants to make you squirm. He wants to set a mood that is very uncomfortable. And there's not a single time that chest cavity opens up and someone reaches in there that it doesn't make me squirm.
It is extraordinarily uncomfortable. Partially because at first it's so goofy and you want to laugh at it. But then it's really not goofy. Like it's so unsettling. And also just such a rare visual occurrence to come across that, you know, outside of like pornography, to see something like that on a screen. And so it's just like, whoo. And I feel like, you could go unpack the American psyche's reaction to looking at vaginas for a very long time. Like we don't have time for that today.
We could do a whole series on that. Yeah.
What Cronenberg says in the commentary, the first time that somebody else reaches into James Woods, is he's getting fucked by television, which I think everybody is.
Yeah. I mean, I laugh, but that's sort of the message here, is that in the plot is that TV is replacing, like they talk about the physical body dying.
Right.
And you becoming part of Videodrome, I guess.
Yeah, and skipping forward to the end of the film, I keep wanting to be like, spoiler alert, but I think that that's understood.
Yeah, totally.
You know, James Woods' character winds up killing himself because he can't deal with this self-destructive. And that's the thing. I think it's self-destructive. I think that the moral message of this movie is not that television makes us violent, but that it makes us self-destructive.
Yeah. And I also feel like there's a little bit of a message of a beware what road you're about to go down thing.
Yeah.
And he's even literally warned by that woman at first, like, the Videodrome isn't something you want to get involved in. But and sort of the classic fable, I guess, of the forbidden fruit or the unknown. And like, that's not a door you want to walk through, but there are some people that are tempted to walk through it. And that is this character.
Oh yeah. This character is tempted by everything and indulges in everything. And is very, very human, through that.
Yeah. And you know, for the first half hour or so, it's sort of up until that first plot point, it's a movie you think is about this guy that stumbles upon this sort of snuff film syndicate, maybe. And it's not until you get that that first videotape coming alive and sort of pulsing and breathing that. And of course, this was in 1983. Like, you didn't know who David Cronenberg really was that much at this point. Like, now audiences are just like, well, although he has changed his tune, and some of the movies he made in later years aren't like this. But generally, you go to a Cronenberg movie and you're waiting on the body horror and this kind of weirdness to come out.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But
after the fly, it was all over. You can't.
what year was The Fly, actually? That was after this?
I'm not sure. Maybe 86, 87? Or was it all the way in the 90s? I have a bad concept of time.
I do too. It was 86. So I think it was probably the movie right after this one.
Yeah.
There may have been one in between, but it's what you had come to expect from Cronenberg. But back then, you're sitting in the theater, you're watching this movie like, oh, weird, this guy stumbled upon this snuff film syndicate and he runs a TV station. And then all of a sudden, just the wheels fly off of this thing.
And very quickly. And that's another thing that I just love about this. I mean, like I always love a practical effect. I always love some good body horror. But the framing of it as it of just being stuck in James Woods' character's hallucination and increasingly not good hallucination, and just completely committing to it and like not taking a step back by like, I don't know, like putting a filter on it or like shooting it wide or through a different lens or whatever, and as the viewer, like that, whoof, like that's part of why it's so unsettling, because you're given this universe where everything is real and everything just keeps being real, but with, you know, breathing television sets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those movies that, you're never quite sure what reality is and what's not. It really plays with that notion of the hallucinations versus reality. And, even from the early moment where he, in a very 80s movie style, like hauls off and slaps that lady he works with. And it's also Debbie Harry for a minute, and he slaps her again. And then he's like, I'm sorry for slapping you. She's like, you didn't slap me. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Hoof.
I wasn't even sure, because it had been a long time since I'd seen this. So I wasn't even sure what was real and what wasn't at this point.
Yeah, I don't think I ever have been until I listened to that director's commentary, and he pretty explicitly lays out that all of the weird stuff is total hallucination.
Right.
And you know, some of the effects of those hallucinations are real. Like James Woods does, or his character does shoot some people, but you know, not with a meat gun.
Right. Well, let's talk about that too.
Because what's badass. A good torso vagina without a good mate gun? Am I right?
That's a quote for all ages. For the ages, not for all ages.
Not
in
for
fact.
All ages.
Yeah, that when the gun becomes a part of his body, and that's another great special effects sequence. And I couldn't help but think that, like, a really cool deep cut cosplay would be that gun hand coupled with the really cool, like, Oculus Rift head helmet thing. Like,
right.
If I ever saw someone do that, I would just be like, props to you, because that is, like, one of the cool deep cuts.
Absolutely. And that helmet, too, is amazing. This is 1983.
It looked great.
It looked so good.
Yeah.
And so creepy. And I love that we get a little moment of 16-bit Debbie Harry in there.
I mean, it was straight up VR, you know? It's crazy, like, years before that was even a thing.
Yeah, years before, I mean, what was the thing with the Game Boy VR thing, even? Like, it was years before that.
Yeah, yeah, this was, and David Cronenberg might have invented VR, for all I know. I'm going to look that up, actually. For all I know, that he should get credited. He should get some money from Oculus Rift.
He should. They should at least, like, put in small print somewhere on every headset. like, thanks, David.
The meat gun, though, and he did this in Existence and some of his other movies. There's this, like, meaty, fleshy quality of his special effects that is just so gross.
Yeah, it's everything is kind of sheeny. It's all moist.
Well, you're triggering a lot of people right now.
I know. And it's all veiny, and it gets, there are, I think, maybe like three different versions of the meat gun that show up. And the first one is very technological, and the second one is very just penile, just very straight up fleshy. And the third is kind of a blend between the two. And I'm sure that there was a specific thought process into doing that, into him becoming this piece of technology that's being used.
And it gets bigger and bigger too. By the time he's at that last one, when he goes to the Spectacular Optical Conference, which, by the way, is an amazing scene.
It is such a trip. I want David Cronenberg to design all of my corporate experiences forever.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? You're like, he's gonna do your corporate conference. Oh, we got Cronenberg. It should be pretty cool. No, it's amazing to look at. That dance sequence is so great and so 80s.
Yeah.
But by the time he gets there with his gun hand, it's like, it's so disturbing. It's really big, and it's just, you can't even see where the gun ends and his body and his arm begins. It's so disturbing.
Yeah. And then that terrific, in multiple meanings of the word, a death sequence of, what's the character's name? It's another terrible pun. Barry Convex.
That's right.
Played by Leslie Carson, who played Deep Throat in The X-Files.
Okay, I knew that face.
Yeah, he's a Canadian character actor who's done a lot of great things. But yeah, just real good at being kind of similarly, just sort of like slimy, just like oh, like, I don't think I like that guy.
Yeah, but like very subtly, sort of like the guy that walks in with a suit on and he's smiling, and you're like, did you just kill someone, or are you happy to, or did you have a nice meal?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Which, did you have ice cream, or was it murder?
Yeah, I knew that guy's face. X-Files, that's totally it.
Yeah. And then right, like just all this like cancer just comes bubbling up out of him. Because there is that theme that the reason that James Woods' character is having these hallucinations is that watching Videodrome, as it turns out, creates brain tumors that create hallucinations.
Technically, that's the plot.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
I mean, I think this is a movie that serves you well if you do maybe just a little brief read up about kind of what, because it can be a little hard to follow at times.
Yeah.
And this is, and I'm not a big proponent of remaking movies, but this is a movie I could see, like, I could see the right director doing it justice with sort of more modern technology. If they didn't, if they kept the sort of spirit of the first one and the tone and didn't make it super flashy, I could see it being a little tighter and more straightforward plot-wise.
Right.
But, it, boy, it's such a fine line between that and, like, completely ruining it.
Yeah, and so many moments in it that I think are so perfect are really awkward, and I think that that's part of what lends that general unsettling vibe to the film. I don't know.
Yeah, you're never sure who is telling the truth. And I'm a big fan of those movies where there's some kind of central secret and you don't know, the central character doesn't know when they're being lied to, and neither does the audience.
Yeah. And you're left at the end kind of with that same feeling. Yeah, dude, I was thinking about this after I sent you that email, and I was like, do I know what Videodrome is about?
It's kind of one of those movies. Well, it's like, and not only what it's about plot-wise, but I found myself at times going like, what's the message here? Because I know there is a message. I don't think it's just shock and horror.
No.
Because Cronenberg's always had a lot more going on than that. It's a cerebral guy. But I don't know. I kind of struggle with figuring it out.
That's one that I don't think I really put together until I was just watching this commentary, because a lot of the commentary is Cronenberg talking about that censorship that he experienced, not only on this film, but on previous films, and, talking about how infuriating it was, because, he'd be talking about these censors taking offense to something and taking it out for no, objective reason.
Right.
And
it's just gross.
Right. Right. They're just grossed out by it. So it goes.
Right.
And he was talking about that. And he was talking about this, this kind of pop psych concept that, especially I think in the 80s, we definitely, a lot of society was buzzing about, violence on television causing violence in communities.
Right.
And Cronenberg, I think that this whole movie is essentially just him going like, oh, you think that TVs cause violence? What if it literally did? Let's explore that. Let's take a look at that, at what that would actually look like, and get Rick Baker on the line. And
I think maybe you're right, and that's where I failed in not going back in time to 1983 when this seriously though, when the movie was made, like if you're looking for the message, you can't really look for it in 2020, yeah. Although it's still super relevant in that way.
Oh, sure. And also, you know, realizing, because I'm sure we talked about this in class, because I know that I read McLuhan in that same class I was talking about, mm-hmm. where we watched this film, but, hearing Cronenberg talk about how much of an influence McLuhan is on him, mm-hmm. and is on this character, Oblivion, is, I don't know. I think that, in this film, he's riffing on the medium is the message and kind mm-hmm. of turning it back on itself and saying like, well, but we are also the medium.
Right.
So
long live the new flesh.
Long live the new flesh.
I mean, there it is.
Ah, oh, so gross.
I know that'd look good on a t-shirt actually.
Let's do it. We have the technology.
Some people would understand it and some people would just be like, man, I'm like, you want to keep people away from you during the times of coronavirus.
Just good, solid. That is 6 feet minimum.
Yeah, there's something about the word flesh even that's just evocative and kind of interesting. And I'm sure every art department production meeting Cronenberg ever had in his life used the word flesh. Like, what did she look like? More fleshy.
More fleshy. Could it be fleshier? What I was thinking of here was flesh.
Yeah, like that's fleshy, but I really want something fleshier. I mean, he's a treasure. I love his later movies. I don't know if you saw History of Violence and what was the other great one with Viggo Mortensen?
Oh, heck. I have not. I'm much more familiar with his earlier work. And I was asking myself earlier, like why haven't I seen more of his films? And I feel like I'm like saving them. I'm like saving them for like uh-huh. some specific time when
Now's
I.
How's the time, Lauren?
You're right. I'm not going anywhere else.
What is the other one? It's driving me crazy. And I usually don't look up stuff, but Crash was. Did you ever see Crash?
Who? I saw. Okay, I have not seen all of Crash. I saw it around the same time that I watched Videodrome, like maybe a little bit after, and I think I got through about 20 minutes of the film, and I just went like, "All right, well, I have reached my lifetime capacity for wound fucking. That's it. That's what it was."
I wasn't a huge fan. I mean, obviously, The Fly is a classic. Dead Zone.
Oh yeah.
I'm looking over his filmography. Naked Lunch, amazing. Existence was so creepy and weird. Oh, Eastern Promises was the other.
Yeah.
I would recommend History of Violence and Eastern Promises.
Yeah.
Those are both great. And I have not seen Cosmopolis yet, but I've heard that's awesome too.
Oh, I'm sure.
Pattinson one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Robert Pattinson. Who knew?
I know, right?
Have you seen The Lighthouse? Did you like The Lighthouse?
I love The Lighthouse. Thought it was amazing. Very divisive movie.
It is. No, I loved it too, but for sure that was a film that I like saw at Midtown Art Cinema and like stumbled out of, and it was daylight outside, which was jarring. And just like
totally.
kept stumbling straight into the Highlander and just ordered whiskey. And I was like, this is the only way that I know how to cope right now.
I've done that many times over the years. We got a great movie theater in Atlanta, which has got an old school bar right next door to it.
Yeah.
Very conveniently located.
Yes. Both are really excellent places to be.
I saw the Lighthouse on a beautiful spring day in New York City and did the same thing and came out. And it was just one of those days where everyone was out. I was like, I don't even know what to do now. Like, I was so disoriented.
Yeah, in the best way. Or a best way. Maybe not the best way.
Looking back, though, on his filmography, Existenz in 1999...
Wow.
I think it's the last really Cronenberg-y weirdo movie, although I didn't see Spider. That looks like it might have been pretty weird, too.
I think it was, from what I've heard. I've not seen that one either. I haven't seen anything from after Existenz, I don't think.
Yeah, I saw Existenz in the movie. I need to revisit that one. I don't think I've seen it since then. That was a good movie.
Yeah, I definitely haven't watched that in like 15 years.
So you got anything else on this gem?
Can we talk about some more puns here?
Yeah, what else you got?
So even Debbie Harris's character is named Nikki Brand. And The last name brand is because of the cigarette scene, the cigarette branding scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She burns her chest.
She burns her chest with a cigarette. And then it's implied that probably James Woods does the same.
Right. He smells the cigarette after she burns it.
Yeah.
That was sort of creepy.
Yeah. And the name Nikki is because of the cuts on her shoulder in the first Nikki brand.
Did not even pick up on that.
I would not have either. But
did he point that out in the commentary?
Kind of proudly, yeah.
Okay. He's like, I was making dad jokes when I was in my late 30s.
Yeah. So many amazing just naming conventions, and the cathode ray mission being
that was pretty
church.
Great.
Uh-huh. And then I still can't get over Spectacular Optical. I just keep saying it in my head and going like,
oh, that's a band name if I ever heard one.
Ooh. Oh, I'm not musically inclined, but I want to be in that band.
You can be in a fake band.
Oh, perfect.
Just that would be the cosplay, is a band called Spectacular Optical, and you're all wearing those Videodrome headsets with meaty gun hands. I would love to see that at a convention.
Yeah, if we ever get Dragon Con back, sure.
Oh, I know. That was going to be this weekend, I guess, right?
Yeah. All of my friends are posting, like, I should be drunk, not in my home right now.
I should be dressed up and drunk. Well, I am, but just not in my living room.
But not here.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
But, everything's a bummer.
There's great. My cat is really excited about this whole thing. He's like, she's home every time. The lap is right there.
Yeah, my animals are pretty excited too. It's been a lot of togetherness, Lauren. Yeah. Don't say too much.
Yeah.
No, it's been cool, in a way.
Yeah, that's it. It's gonna end someday, and in the meanwhile, we are all learning a lot about ourselves, and that's a good journey to go on.
That's right. Long live the new flesh.
Long live the new flesh.
Well, thanks for picking Videodrome. It was fun to go back and watch that one. And I think I'm going to try and check out the director's commentary. I want to see what that's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. If you need to borrow the DVD and a PS2, I'm here for you.
I got a PS3. So I think so, in a box somewhere. And we'll have you back to talk about The Witch. And maybe we'll do, we could either roundtable that, or we'll just do another horror roundtable, and you can jump in on that too.
Yeah, great. I'd love to. Anytime. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Well, hang in there.
You too. Yeah.
And I'll see you soon.
All right.
Movie Crush is produced, edited, and engineered by Ramsey Yunt here in our home studio at Pont City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.